Testing 1, 2. Testing 1, 2. September 18th, 1979, talking to Henry Okada in Nalato.
Okay, well, I will start out with where you were born.
Right here, Nalato. December 21st, 1926. Yeah.
Christmas present to your parents?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, my father died heart attack, 1937, right across Trudy's Island. We went out rat hunting, see? So he moved us out in the spring first. And so my brother came back for him. My brother stayed overnight here and he went back. Going back across, and there was George Hathaway, you call George Hathaway, old guy. My brother was small, and we were small. He was put the sled down with the dogs, and he just keeled right over the sled. Heart attack right there. So this old guy, my brother got all excited, he didn't know what to do. So this old guy stopped his dogs and went to my father. He told my brother that your daddy died there. So he brought him back. Next day they went back up. So we came on down. It was pretty late in the spring. I still remember though. Oh, they buried him for us. We went back up that spring. Flood that spring. Barely move around. But we still ran out of grub that time. That's all we had to live on. It's just real quick in the crop we had. So we eat them fish dinner every day. My mother used to hunt all night and didn't hardly catch any rats. We were small. Rats must have been about 50 cents or 6 bits that time. Lucky the food was cheap. So we came out that spring after the water went down. We stopped at what they call 2 Mile down here. Stayed there till they cleaned up the houses and everything like that, I guess. So we came on down again. Then what little rats we killed, we had to live on that, see. We had to live on. Cannot flash it around. This is why I really work to take care of my job, because when I was growing up, I desired a lot of kids. That's where I really learned to. And I thank myself for that too, you know, that the kids had a lot of stuff that what I didn't have. Now, as I was growing up, I desired them. I think. And when I figure like that, I think to myself. When I get old enough and I start working for myself, I might have the same thing as what they have, see? Because there was no eight them days. My mother didn't get an eight, nothing. But lucky the milk was 7 cents per dollar, pound of coffee was 50 cents them days. Well, for a few dollars you can get a little grub anyway. Them days it was really hard for us. And after that, my brother went to work and we had to take care of our mother and myself. I was 15 years old when the river boat was burning wood. And steamer Nenana and steamer Alice was burning wood. They were going up and down the river. And old man Summers was taking the contract of these riverboat woods. And he was paying $7 a cord on the stump. You have to haul that wood out, pile it at 8 foot high. And I made 16 cords of wood before Christmas to make a living that time. And $7 a cord, it was a lot of money for us. No chainsaw them days too. You just have to use one man's son. You have to worry like hell if you're going to get any grub again. You cannot flash a dollar around or nothing them days that time for us. Because we had no father, no aid, no food stamps. Not like today. Everybody, anybody in town got food stamps. And that's what really bugs me now after I start working. I've been working for the school for 16 years now. And I just keep working because, and I didn't have no schooling, just in Canada, see. I didn't have hardly any schooling. Maybe I went to third or second grade. And I think I'm proud of myself. A lot of these guys had college education and everything like that come to me. They have trouble. See, I know anything about that stuff. But what right now, what I had in my head, it's all up here in my head because I didn't have the schooling they had and everything. And anything that I see, the guy that put up the machine for me or anything, I really watch him, how he does it. And he showed to me how it's going to, what it's supposed to do and what it's supposed to do with it. Nowadays, them kids got good schooling and everything, but too much dope. If you look at Harold Smilka, take a sample for Harold Smilka. Me and him, I was building wheel. He was small. The first fish wheel I was going to build for my mother. All we had was just a little 12-foot boat, just like a box, just to build a box. This guy built it and he gave it to his father, John Summers. You know, he was running a store there. And he left it with his father. And it was just a 12-foot, 1-inch board. Just might as well just call it a box. And we didn't have no money to buy a motor, no motors, nothing. All of it. So we hired somebody to push our wheel down here at my camp, 6 miles. Me and my mother, we had little grub. They gave us little grub because I was going to trade it off with dry fish after the fish dries to the traders. So he gave us a little grub and we went down. Darn it, one morning, I worked till about 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock every night. My mother was old, getting old, and she goes to bed. Just first time we moved in there. I have to go up the hill at night, get poles. And when we first moved down there, the Hondorf boys, the commissioner boys, they were fishing down there at Foreman. When I was leaving, they tell me to go use their poles. Bring it down to your camp and use it. And how I'm going to come up there against the current. I have no boat, nothing, just canoe, what they call canoe. So I told my mother, I'm going to go up and get them poles. He told me, go ahead. I'm going to bring them down. I tell him I'll tie logs together. Couldn't afford to buy even nails that day. So I paddled up to my fish wheel. It swept where I got my fish wheel. I dropped my canoe around on the beach. And I paddled up in that canoe and I went up there at night. Packed all the stringers down to the river. I dropped them down. Tied them together with the little rope I had. I throw all the poles down and I tow it down in the canoe. That was our boat. And the next couple, we were cutting fish and I was cutting fish. I go to bed late. Pretty soon, my mother got up. I heard her got up in the morning and he called me. He said, your fish wheel is floating out up here. Here the fish. The fish wheel got full in the box, it's over lopsided. Well, I made a dead man, what they call dead man, that tied a cable to. But I didn't put it in far enough, and so it just dropped that dead man right out. So the cable was dragging, but there's a big eddy in front of my camp. That's just what helped me. So I jumped in the canoe there, and I paddled it, tried to swung into the eddy with me. So I pull up the cable. My mother was standing on the beach there. So I just tied the rope to it with the rope we had, tied it into the beach. And I grabbed this boat. Every time I go to the wheel, I make about 3-4 trips. That's how small the boat was. And I brought it all the fish in. And then we had a little bin, like it just made out just along the water. We have to change willows every day. So I told my mother, well, I'm gonna pull this wheel back up. And she said, okay. I told my mother, get under wheel for me. I'd knock off the paddles, everything. So she started pushing it out for me, just scraping along the beach. Well, the eddy helped me all the way up to where I got this wheel. But as soon as I hit the current, I couldn't pull anymore, because I had to worry about my mother too. So I tied it up right there again, and I tell her, go ahead, walk back down to the camp and start cutting fish. I can set it back up. I don't know what. We had enough fish for our dogs already, but because I know it, I have to sell that fish. I have to trade off for groceries for the winter too. I had 12 racks of fish up before 4th of July, by 4th of July. Me and my mother getting poles and racks up. And we had enough fish for our dogs. All I had was 5 dogs. But what worries me, I have to sell fish to get some more groceries because I have no job. And then guys was going to the cannery. And then I was thinking right there while I was working at this wheel. Pretty soon Johnny Summers from Caltech, he was running a store there and he was coming up. And he always stopped with me. Pretty soon I was just working at my wheel and then he came along again. Guy stopped and set up the wheel with me and I still got about 700 fish to cut down there. And then I told him, well, Johnny, his name was Johnny Summers. And then I told him, well, next year I'm going to have enough fish. I'm going to have enough fish for next year's fish too. I'm going to go to the cannery next year if I could go, I told him. Oh, he's telling me, no, you're catching a lot of fish. You got that little boat there. And I tell him, no, I'm going to try to get a boat engine or something, inboard or something. Yeah, he didn't say nothing. He thought I was gonna... Then when I went back down to my mother after we got through with the wheel, well, I told my mother, I told him, this is my last year fishing. I'm going to go look for work next summer. Tell me, where are you going to go? I don't know if you can go, you drink to him. And I didn't drink that much. I tell him, no, because we got no boat. We have to wait for somebody to go by. If we hope that he stop, you know, to pick us up. So he stopped. Sometimes he stopped. Sometimes we run out of grub with little stuff. But we don't want to wave anybody in just to go up pretty soon. Summer's wife came down to my mother while during the fishing. So they had boats. So it was a little easier for us then because we had a way to bring up our fish, you know. They were cutting fish out of the wheel and they had to bring up their fish. So I filled up my little cash, what cash we had, and I sold, paid off the fish at 7 cents a 5-7 cents a pound of fish that time, sun-dried fish. But for a few dollars, you can get a lot of groceries them days. Well, the next summer, that really fixed me up. You know, next summer, I went to the cannery. 1945, I went to the cannery. Boys was working over there. Stayed over there for another 2 months. Bristol Bay. Made $700. That was a lot of money, though, $700. Came back. So I told these guys, Summers, but Johnny Summers had mill down in Caltech. And I told him, you got a boat lumber? And he said, yeah. Can I buy it? He said, yeah. He even brought it up for me. And his dad had little air cool motors, 7 horse. Right there, I bought the stuff with $700. I bought all the material and the engine. But I had nine horse Johnson. I bought for $250 from this guy too. But I didn't have no money to get the boat belt, see? I didn't have no more money to get the boat belt. So Eddie told me that he'll build the boat for me. I told him, okay. So he told me, you give me the kicker. I was glad. So I had an inboard motor. Then the next summer we went down there. No, pardon me. That fall we went over with Eddie Hildebrand. We stayed over there all winter. Well, I was single, but I just keep thinking of my mother, how hard it was. So we stayed out there all winter. We catch a lot of beaver, a lot of fur. We come in, pay off the bills, which we take over. Then my mother wanted to go over. Well, that was how cheap the grub was for the whole winter. My mother made out the list. And this trader add up the stuff what we was gonna get. It was $400. That's for the whole winter. That's what we was gonna live on. But that was too much for him, just for this trader. He said that, see, that's quite a bit grub. For $400, that's for the whole month, the whole winter. Now, well, he know that I had to trap for to pay that off, but he can't depend on me. You see, I was pretty small like yet. Well, I told him, well, my mother said, well, he said it was quite a bit. $400 was quite a bit. Well, he said, well, that's all right. He scratched off a lot of stuff, but that's okay, he said. We'll make it. So my mother, we took the crop. So we left here with Eddie and then went to over to where they call Mud River. So we went down to Caltech. His boy had a store there. And what little, well, we didn't want to get too much credit there too. We got a little more stuff there. Well, we went over. Well, we stayed out the whole winter till beaver season is open. Paid off that $400, and then we had a little more money to spend. I wouldn't say how many beaver I caught because it was added. It's just a limit to catch the beaver nowadays. And it still is today, you know. But I caught a pretty good number of beaver that what we could lift on all summer without getting hungry, you know. We couldn't lift classy, but we could lift it on it. So we came back in the spring. Well, we lifted pretty good through that summer. All until we didn't have to be shy to get anything in the store because we had the money to get it, you know, that time. We just don't flash it around, though. We just need get just what we need, and that's it. So we just kept it like that, and that's how this. Now these nowadays kids have good schooling, but they don't use it like the way I was going to tell you about Harold. Harold was just a kid when we got logs with me. We had to borrow my brother's boat, Charlie Brush. He had an old one-lunger inboard motor. So Harold said he was going to go with me. Well, I couldn't hire anybody to help me to get logs because I didn't have no money. But this Charlie Brush boat head was easy on gas, really easy. And so we went up the river and we got 5 standing logs. Took us all night. The herd was small, everything. So that, after that, he went to the mission, Holy Cross Mission. It's where he had all the schooling. He had the schooling. And the kids that went to school with him, he said them boys were better, had education than him. We're better mechanic and everything. And them boys are just, all they do is just loafing now. You know, like we're here in the smack. That shows the guys that want to use their head, it's where they're at. And I had the school in these kids' hat. I would never be around here too. Just 1937, my father was going to send us out to San Francisco. That's where his sister was. And I was going to go to school there. But I think we're lucky that we didn't went because we were small. My mother would have been all alone, so you see. And then it would have been hard for my mother. We used to work for 50 cents an hour at the store, just cutting wood like everything, you know, 50 cents an hour all day. But that was a lot of money for us, though, 50 cents an hour. There used to be a mill right down here, sawmill, that used to cut lumber. It used to work by steam. We used to even hang around there just to get hired around there sometimes for 50 cents an hour. And that mill used to run just pretty fast. And we used to run with that lumber, you know, they were cutting. We used to have to run with it to keep up with it. Hot or no hot or anything. And nowadays, everything is so easy and everything, you know. And that's why I talk to the kids, my kids, everything. Once in a while, how I was raised. I told them, boy, you kids have it easier than when I was raised and everything. You got it made. You guys should use your head. Keep off them bottles too much. That's what I was trying to tell them all the time. But you know, there's too much of that dope and stuff like that nowadays. That's how these young generations, you know, they're just losing their minds. Go to school for nothing. And a lot of these kids, they don't know what is all these instruments I'm running for. The less school that I had, then they had, you know. And if they tell me what's this for, I can turn this whole school right out to them. They wouldn't know what's going on. Nothing. Like last winter, this school light plant went out, and one of the teachers tripped the generator, standby generator, but I was tired. I went home and went to bed. Next morning, I came on down to everything froze up. But every time I see the guys working, but I doesn't know or nothing, I really watch them. I didn't even learn how to sweat a pipe. I didn't even, for 16, the first year I seen guys working around the school, just when I started working as a janitor. But I follow the guys, what they're doing, and because I want to be really interested in it. And I caught on to what they're doing. Now I can do the same thing as what the guys was doing. Because it's all in my head. And everything. 1959, when this old camp was going to drill, the guy's chopper came on down to our fish camp right there. He landed. We came up with a load of fish that time. My mother was there by herself. She was pretty old. He said, the chopper, a helicopter landed and asked for you, but he was gone. And I told them you went uptown to brought up fish. So the next day they came back. And I don't know what the oil camp looks like. I didn't know what they meant. So they start talking to me. They tell me, can we level out this? Can we make a dock here? I told them, what you guys going to do? We're going to drill for oil out there. We're going to make a base camp right here. But that hill was just like this right at the foot. We were just right at the foot of it. Yeah. And I tell them, sure, go ahead. If you promise me a job, I sure will let you go. He said, we'll pay you for it and everything. But you cannot move us out right away before we take our fish down. He said, no, we wouldn't even bother your camp, just right down here. Tell them, go right ahead. So they took off. And then I thought they were going to come in right away, but no, we moved away everything. Pretty soon the barge came on down with some stuff. Well, people start coming down looking for jobs. But these guys promised me that they would have hired me first. So I stayed up here, and pretty soon the chopper came. Pretty soon, me and this Charlie, they picked us up, just told us to go on down, go down, look, sign in if we want to work. And so we went down, but we couldn't stay at the camp. We had to run forward and back. So they were building a road. They built a road, 14 miles of road. And, well, see, I just trying to, first time I've seen an oil can, I never did get on a cat or nothing before. So I started, well, they put us on the cutting corduroys. So we started cutting corduroys, what they put under the stuff, you know, what they were unloading. They had really big boat came up from the mob. So we was working. Pretty soon, they laid us off again. They were all through with us, you know, till they built the road, till they make the camp. This guy will sit. Well, I thought, well, they're true with us, we're good. Man, and started wearing again. Well, I was married then already too. Bunch of kids, and then pretty soon they came on back up. They tell us, well, if I want to work, they ask for me. I tell them, yeah. So we went down by boat. They tell us, well, we're going to stay there now. So we went down by boat, and we went for the next morning, we went out by helicopter. Back 14 miles, see, just like a little place there, you know, they had everything all straightened out, no camps, or just constant hot for some. So I didn't even know what old stove to start. But this guy, his foreman, he was trying to, he said, well, we're going to start this old stove. I didn't even know how to start a fire pot or a stove. But he started fooling around with him. He didn't know how to, him too. But he started fooling around with it, but I just stayed right on top with him. So I was just watching what he's doing. Pretty soon we got it going. Pretty soon we seen oil coming in. So we'll throw match and then we'll let it. We went to the next one. It was easier. It was just too good. So the mechanic came up, and then carpenters were in there building 13 little bunkhouses, mess hall first. It's just they just put up the cabins in one day, you know. Well, they tell me, well, you and Charlie are going to take care of the camp. But, well, Charlie was my half brother too, but he gets mad, like. But I know he wants to come home, like, you know. Start getting mad at me, and well, he had an experience a couple of years before that, him, you know, but me, my first time at oil camp, and I didn't even know how to drive a cat, didn't know nothing. Well, Charlie didn't get cranky. I know he was getting cranky to this mechanic that's going to stay at the camp, you know, take care of the equipment. Drilling, they were putting up a drilling of stuff up there, but I was just lucky that I had a good guys to work with. This guy, this foreman from the derrick was, came to me and he told me, well, let's get on that D6 forklift and let's haul a barrel of dillo down for the drilling rig up there because the roughnecks are going to run out of oil up there and nobody's going to know how to drive a cat. But I watched this mechanic, how he drives this cat, you know. Follow him around when he gets on the cat or any kind of equipment, pretty soon. So I said, okay. Well, I got on the cat. Well, I didn't know quite how to do with it, but I kept looking at it. But it seems like I know what this guy was doing. So I got it walking. It was about a quarter of a mile where the oil and gas was piled. Well, the first barrel I came to, I punched my forks through the barrel. Well, the damn, I thought, boy, I got scared, you know. I thought, well, hell, I thought I was going down the road. But this boss said, well, we got to learn. It takes to learn. So he didn't mind. Lucky that the oil outfit didn't mind about the equipment. So we left the forks up again. Try the next one. I tell him, can we roll it onto the forks? He said, we're not supposed to lift over 50 pounds. That's what the machine we got the machine for, you know. But hell, I don't know. I left over 150 pounds. That's all I know. That's how I work, you know. I used to work. Oh, he said, no, we're not supposed to lift over 50 pounds. Well, I told him, we're not going to lift it. We're just going to roll it. And he said, okay, let's try it. We rolled it, got it on the forks. Well, another thing is I start sweating. I don't know how to get out of there now. We're in squeezed tight. Well, this guy said, well, we have to learn. Nobody around us. So we I scraped this one barrel of gas, the tracks. We'll make a little hole on it. But he said, that's nothing. So we got to learn. See, and I was proud, you know. So we went up to this, well, I start sweating to this derrick. Well, I know we have to get him squeezed tight too, up there. And these guys that operate the cats, no, it's nothing to them. So we got up there, and all I know, I was just going to lift it, you know. I'm just going to lift it some way. And I do it the hard way, you know. But he said, we don't allow it to lift not over 50 pounds. So we got there. She was sweating first gear. So just, the guy was just walking with me. So we got there, and I told him, well, how are we going to do it? Then Jesus, you know, he's just trying to get me to squeeze away. He didn't know how to drive a cat too. So we got to this derrick and I just dropped it right there. I put it down. I said, the hell with it. I'm going to roll it. That's the only way I know how to work. Do it the hard way, you know. So he just walked away from me. Go ahead, use your own judgment. So I had to lift it up on the barrel racks. But I laid planks against it. Pretty soon these roughnecks were working and they looked at me. They said, boy, you Indians work hard. I tell them that's just the way I was raised, working hard. I never had it like this easy. I have to work hard, I tell them. And I got me kind of mad, you know. Then I didn't sit nothing. Well, I got this barrel there anyway. Pretty soon, well, I didn't know. I didn't know nothing. Pretty soon, the superintendent came out to me. He told me, he called me by my name. He told me, you got nothing to do with that derrick up there. Nothing. Your job is supposed to be taking care of the light plant and fueling up the camp. That's all, that's your job. And who told you to call that barrel? I thought he saw the barrel up there put a punch hole through the barrel, you know. And I thought, here I am going down the road. I know, you know, I was sweating. And well, they tell me, don't ever fool around up there with them guys' stuff. If they're running out of anything, let them get it. And if they ask you to do something again and you tell them, no, it's not your job. If they get mad at you or they tell you something, tell them to come visit me. I said, okay. So with Charlie, you know, Charlie was just 13 bunk houses. That was all there was to him. But sometimes Charlie, he hides from us. He gets mad at us. Well, then this guy, he tell us, learn to drive that cat around. Drive it around. Gee, that was my glory then, you know. Gee, was right here is my chance to learn something, I thought. Well, I was learning a lot of things, but I didn't even know of the names of. They have a lot of different names. There was a lot of guys, I wouldn't mention the guy's name though that was working there, had schooling, everything. And they didn't know what the hell the meanings of a lot of that stuff. But me, I don't know because I don't know. I have to ask the guy, what's the meaning of that? What that means? So the guy is glad. He said, gee, boy, that's very glad when you ask something like that, that's what you don't know. I tell him, oh, that's why I keep asking. And he said, well, that's the way to learn. So now you see them guys, you ask them for something, but they don't know what it means. I have to go there. Sometimes I hear them and the guys, looking around. Well, it's right there in front of them, but you don't know what it means. And I had to ask and ask. Maybe sometimes them guys got tired of me, but they were glad of what they were asking. And I was asking because first time I was working for that kind of a job. And he's driving this cat. You know, I thought I was great driving that cat. Well, pretty soon I start driving that cat. Pretty soon this mechanic cat start breaking down. And he told me, well, you better come into the shop and start taking cats apart with me. You want to? I tell him, that's the best thing I ever heard. Well, the guy starts sitting there on the workbench over there. And, well, he told me, he just told me to start on that, the easiest way that you can get it off. Well, shucks, I was glad. And I start taking them apart. Well, it's where it's hard. Sometimes I don't even know how to turn the bolts when I first started. But I was just lucky that guy was old, mechanic was old. He was easygoing guy. And he told me, well, you're turning the wrong way. And then he gave me a ratchet. Then I didn't even know how to adjust that ratchet. So I get off the cat. Well, I didn't know what tools, you know, my father didn't have no tools or nothing. Well, we couldn't afford to have tools. But this old camp, they had tools just up to your neck, couldn't you know? I was surprised to see all them. I didn't even know what them tools were for. I didn't even know that tools was like that. All I known was 8-inch Creston wrench, 6-inch. That's all I knew. I didn't even know what socket looked like. Gee, I was surprised. I didn't even know the number of the sockets sometimes. I didn't even know 1/2-inch drive or 3/8 drive or nothing that time. When we started, he told me, give me 1/2-inch drive. Well, I'm stuck right there. I don't know what he meant. So I just stand there. Well, he told me, well, nobody's 1/2-inch drive. He had to come down and show it to me. And he told me, well, this is 3/8 drive right here. Two different sizes, that's all we got. But the numbers is on the socket, he said. The numbers is on the socket, he told me. Yeah. And he showed me the numbers. It was really quick. It was easy. Then you know, I started. Well, she was frightened. I thought she was learning. I sure learned lots from that old cat. Anyway, learned how to drive cat. Then late in the winter, he told me, "Well, you want to learn to weld?" I told him, "Sure, that's the best thing you ever told me. Pick up all the scrap iron that you can pick up." And we had all kind of scrap iron in the shop there. We had a big shop, welder. Well, I just keep running around picking up scrap iron and everything. I brought it over there to the welder and told me, go ahead and start up the welder. And he said, okay. I said, I started up the welder. Then I told me, go ahead and start welding. Well, I tried, but no arc. He told me, what's the matter? I told him, I don't know. I don't know what's the matter, no arc. You got something wrong. Well, he said that you got to think for yourself now. And I was just stuck there. And he told me, well, you know what's the matter? He called me, I told him, yeah. You know what's the matter? You don't have it ground. And I told him, I don't know, I didn't know that. First time I'm fooling around with you. But he told me, looks like you really want to learn. I told him, yeah. His name was Starrick, to this guy. I told him, yeah. So he told me, clamp, whenever anything you want to weld, clamp it to the iron, ground it. Pretty soon he told me, hit that iron, you'll get arc. Got arc. Put on a helmet. He told me to put on a helmet. And Well, I seen him using a helmet. I know what it meant then. So I started fooling around. He'd get stuck with me and everything, you know. And he stopped me, and then he told me how far to put it away from this iron to weld. Oh, it was the glory at that time. You know, I thought I was in glory. I thought I could weld anything, you know. We started welding irons together. Well, I was just learning, you know. Okay, he told me. Okay, now the hardest, this is easy, he said. Well, I burned up maybe the 50 pounds of rock that day, you know. You know, after work, there's nothing to do in the evening from 6 to 6, long days in March, you know. I went right back up there again, right after lunch, right after dinner. I burned up another half a can of welding rods. Gee, I thought, I'm going to start making stuff. Well, then I went back over to the bunkhouse. We were sleeping in one bunkhouse, me and him, because we were alert 24 hours a day. We were taking care of the camp, see. So, well, he came, I told him, well, I worked all this time. Okay, he told me, that's easy, he told me. I told him, yeah. He told me, how it is. I told him, it's pretty easy. Yeah, he said, that's easy. Tomorrow you're going to try different. You ever tried overhead welding? He told me. I tell him, well, he got me stung again right there, you know, overhead welding. And I didn't know what means overhead welding. I tell him, no. I know how to weld now, a little bit. Anyway, I tell him. Okay, well, tomorrow morning, tomorrow after we get through with everything, checking everything out, light plan. 6 o'clock, we go to work in the morning. I've taken care of the light plan. That's where I started my maintenance there, taking care of the plant, got up on the plant, checked the gauges, checked the fuel, checked the oil. So he was working over there. Well, I still had this thinking of his overhead welding. I didn't know what he meant. So he got kind of through with what he was doing too. And right away, I'd done what I supposed to have done. I still thinking of this welding, you know. When started, what is this overhead welding? Then he told me, well, overhead, we'll try it later, after coffee break, he told me. See, I kept looking at my time. I thought to myself, well, when the heck is going to be coffee time? 10 o'clock is coffee break. After coffee break, I drank coffee right away. So I went back down again. I started picking up the scrapped iron again. And I started welding again, you know. It was just my glory. And I thought this welding, what I was doing, you know, it was really good for me. Gee, it looked nice for me, you know. Just fine. Gee, I thought I'd get a job any place welding. That's what I thought. And he told me, well, you chip your flex off. When he said flex, I don't know what that means to. I thought we're not even supposed to hammer that. Get your chipping hammer, he told me. Well, that's where I got stung again. Chipping hammer. I know what means chipping hammer. Well, he told me, well, you know what? Then he goes to the tools with me. He told me, this is what you call chipping hammer. And the flux you have to chip off your welding. It's all how if you take your welding, it looks good is that all that flux is on it. He chipped his welding, little welding off. She was fright. Looked like hell. She, I got embarrassed, you know. He told me, that's okay. It's okay, you'll learn. And I said, okay. He told me, just keep trying. Go so far, get your chipping hammer and chip it. And you'll see the mistake or you're making. See how you go too fast, or you go too slow, or you got it too high or too low. You don't watch how it's flowing. I don't understand all what he's meaning, you know. So I stopped right there. So he made a couple of beats like that, you know, right away. Well, he's a good welder. Him, mechanic and everything. So he did that. But he made it some kind of a bump weld there. That's the way you go, you can go too fast. You're trying to go too fast. And so I kept bugging him, and I told him, well, how fast do you have to go? Then he's done a good finishing welding right in front on top of the iron. I was really watching him. He had to let me use helmet and how close or how fast he had to go. He just watched that flowing. Watch the flowing on the welding. And I kept trying. And now I can, from learning from that, I can weld and braze anything. From the oil camp that I was working with. But I just had lucky that I had a good mechanic that showed me all that what I knew until I knew. And I could sweat pipes on anything.